And away we go. It's a Getaway Friday here on WWGH Radio, the Now program, Friday, March the 27th, 2020, 18 minutes past the hour. And we have got a great show for you today. As many of you know, yesterday, the nation with the most confirmed cases of coronavirus became the United States of America. 82,404 infected, 1,100 dead at this point, and those numbers are ever changing. But that was the news yesterday. A lot of things going on in New York right now. New York is the epicenter of this pandemic. Right now, 30,811 people have been confirmed with COVID-19 in New York. Deaths in New York at this point stand at 285. And we have not crested with this disease as of yet. We have a great morning planned here on WWGH Radio. In an exclusive interview, he does not do these very often, but legendary talk show host Phil Donahue will be on this morning from 11:10 until 1 p.m. uninterrupted. 2 hours with Phil Donahue coming up this morning, 11:10 to 1 p.m. But this hour, we're joined by a visitor to this program who I have loved for many, many years. He hasn't been on in quite a while. All the more reason to welcome him back and to come on during a very precarious time. He is the only person that Johnny Carson ever thought could challenge him for the late night throne, king of late night. His shows spanned, the guest list is amazing. Jackie Robinson, Marlon Brando, Alfred Hitchcock, Bob Hope, Groucho Marx. He talked to them all. He is the interviewer's interviewer, the conversationalist, one of the best. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones in precarious times, the legendary Dick Cavett. Mr. Cavett, how are you?
Well, I think I'm all right. Doesn't this whole thing seem like a dream that somebody had the terrible idea of writing a science fiction novel in which a plague hits the world like this? It just doesn't seem like anything we're used to. I wonder how many people are having just plain nervous breakdowns, or I think of somebody, as an old lady I see sometimes in my neighborhood with her dog in the daytime, and she looks rather poverty-stricken, and I thought, I wonder if she's sitting in a one-room apartment now with her dog, unable to get groceries or anything. And you can multiply her by hundreds and thousands. It's just, it seems like you'll wake up and say to somebody, I had the worst dream. I dreamed that this thing called the virus had played. Has anybody close to you, as they say, been stricken?
You know, nobody has at this point, and I'm thankful for that. I don't know anybody, not in my circle. Has anybody in your circle had it?
It depends on how widely you make my circle. it doesn't include poor Boris, but now he has it. And could some of us ever confess that there are a couple people whose names we all know you almost wish would get it? I don't think we need to confess that. No, nobody.
Mr. Cavett, what does it say that Prince Charles has tested positive for this? It's unbelievable in a lot of people's minds.
Well, perhaps he and some of the more benighted followers of him think that royalty has some kind of insurance against getting this. If you're not a fan of Prince Charles, then I suggest you read Christopher Hitchens' piece called The Prince of Piffle, P-I-F-F-L-E. Prince Charles is a bit of a dork. I don't want him to be sick. I want you to understand that.
Absolutely. You know, Mr. Cabot, you talked about people being shut in, and you have publicly battled with depression. How have you felt during this whole episode?
Well, I haven't gotten the classic case of what's known as depression over it. But it's just like it's sort of a cloudiness that you carry around because of it. And there are folks who have fallen into the depths of despair over this, and you have to feel sorry for them, because this and depression would just about make you toy with putting yourself away. It's just unimaginable how anyone could survive having both. And yet they do. We do hear from them. We do see them on the news, people saying, I don't know how I can go on, but they will credit their dog, their kids, their sister, somebody who recognizes the horror of having depression and this specific malady, and take care of them at their peril. So, hey, can I bring my wife into this?
Yeah, please do.
She's smarter than I am, and that will be quickly evident. Her professional name has always been Martha Rogers, and it's strange to have a wife who has written how many business books,
That's enough.
I think there are, how many are there? How many?
Nine
business books. Yeah. So she is going to read from them for the rest of the hour. Anyway, here's Martha.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, here's Martha.
Yeah.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Good. How are you, Martha?
Oh, excellent. You know, it's that we take our temperatures every morning, and we have deliveries to but not through the door, and we drive through the pharmacy, and, you know, the usual.
Were you surprised at the quickness of how this came on, the quickness of how the world changed?
Of how 2 weeks ago we were normal and now we're not?
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm surprised at that. I mean, I'm not sure how much it's affected you, because we're out in the country right now, so that's a good place to be during the plague.
Yeah, you better envy the people who don't have to live in a squalid apartment in any town in America, who live without friends, unable to see people.
My grandmother remembered the 1918 influenza. She's gone now, but she said, you know, you just had to get up and carry on. You just had to wash your hands and get dressed, and then you had to wash your hands and then go to school, and then you had to wash your hands, you had to eat lunch, and then 10 years after that, they all had a depression. Might not take us 10 years.
Mm. Have you been surprised at the panic level that has come about in society? People can't buy toilet paper. People are going to the stores. There's no meat. There's no milk. There's no... It's the strangest.
Yeah. Yeah. Mom, why don't we have any food? Shut up and eat your toilet paper.
That's a terrible joke. But not so far from the truth, apparently.
And what about all the parents who are finding out that it wasn't the teacher's fault after all?
Well, you know, one of the things that has come out of this is I hope we still have the ability to laugh during it, because right now people are very on edge. Have you found that with friends of yours?
Sure. But you know what? They're pretty wonderful people anyway.
If we didn't have a president who can keep us amused constantly, we'd probably be worse off. You know, we got his gut to think about and his alleged head and all sorts of things. And he merrily whistling, all but whistling, that it's going to be fine, the churches will be bulging with people, and We just have to look forward to the nice parts of this. We're going to be better when it's over. He hasn't spelled out exactly how we're all going to be better, and everything will be better even than it's been before. I think a lot of people would settle for how it's been before. And maybe, and of course, the things we need the most, the masks, the protective garments, the ventilators, the president.
Well, the president now says they don't really need that many in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't really need that.
I wish you could get his gut to shut up.
Well,
oh, boy.
Governor Cuomo has taken the forefront here in New York. What have you made of Governor Cuomo's response to this?
He's been wonderful. I mean, just miraculously good in the face of this. He seems to have everything that's needed. And his ideas are sharp. His delivery is good. I didn't realize when I first tuned into him sitting there talking to a camera that he was not alone in the room. I didn't realize there was scattered in the room, 8 feet apart, it looks like, our press people. And it's just good to have. He must be an anchor to a lot of people, the way he is controlled and he's smart and he lays it out brilliantly. We need more Cuomos and fewer
the truth is that Trump has now told Cuomo and Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, that he doesn't think they need as many ventilators as they think they do, and all the other PPE and the other protective gear, and therefore the nurses are having to cut up garbage bags and put them over their heads. Of course, New Yorkers are used to doing that as raincoats, but still different now. When I'm listening to Trump declare success and how we should all be in church by Easter and that sort of thing, that I'm reminded of the moment a few weeks after shock and awe in Iraq, when President Bush stood on the side of a big ship and said battleship and said mission accomplished.
Yeah, Trump seems to be on the verge of mission accomplished now. It's hard to believe. Hard to believe. That's an eloquent way of putting it. It's astounding.
And he thinks that because we don't have that many deaths, and of course we only have 1,100, which probably not one of them is only to the people who are involved, because of that, and you have 40,000 deaths a year from regular flu, then there's nothing to worry about, even though we're facing about 80,000 deaths by July. Possibly. But if we don't, then we might be facing 80,000 deaths by October, and no telling how many after that. The fact that we're the highest in the world now with plenty of time, with plenty of warning. Wuhan, China didn't have any warning. We did. And the fact that we have, that we had already dismantled the pandemic unit at the National Security Council, and I'm dismayed.
I think they're going to have to reconvene the Nuremberg war criminals trial for some of the people involved in this who are responsible.
But you told me that you knew where we could get gas for $1.59.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you tell everybody where we're going to get gas for $1.59?
Well, I'm afraid you'll all go there and buy it all up. And then
oh, you mean like the toilet paper?
No gas, no toilet paper, no fun. That's it.
You know, Mr. Cavett, I was thinking about this earlier today. Well, where does this?
Stop calling me Mr. Cavett.
Yeah, I can skip over that if you like.
Mr. Dick isn't good enough. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry, stupid interruption.
Oh man, where you've lived a lot of history. You were on the air in tumultuous times. Where is this going to rank in the history? We had 1968, the year the United States had a nervous breakdown. We had the Challenger explosion, 9/11, the assassination of JFK. Where is this going to go in history 100 years from now?
I'm sure it'll be a big black dot on the map of history. Well, in fact, also there's the terrible thought that it may be with us 100 years from now, that it can settle in a way that will have repetitions and echoes and just plain reappearances.
Now, the plague came and went every 10 years for a century. Just for a cheerful note.
And it goes through you when you see one of the alleged experts and one of even the real experts saying, we're not anywhere near through with this. The worst is yet to come. It's still being said.
Yeah, you know, it's like remembering where you were. Scott says, you know, where how's this going to wear in 50 years? I think that all the kids who are in their 20s now, except the ones who were all together in Florida and insisted on having their party, and because they might all be dead, but the ones who actually have been careful, 50 years from now, they will remember where they were during the coronavirus and where what happened and how it affected their lives. Just the way you remember where you were during the time the lights went out in New York. And, you know, for everybody it was hard, but for the people in the elevators it was really hard. It was a different level of hard. Just like for now, it's hard for everybody, but it's really hard for people with children under 5. Are you one of those, Scott?
Oh, yeah. It was an awful time.
Yeah, children. Yeah, but are you now? I mean, I would say the people who are stuck at home and must be extremely careful with children who are under 5 with no help, and you can't let grandma in, and you can't do, you know, all that stuff. So I just think there are different levels of difficulty for having to deal with it. I mean, we're fine here, truly.
Well, that's...
I wonder who will write the definitive book on... I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No.
Who will write the big, good book on this? Probably any number of people will tackle it. But it's actually uncontainable. I don't see how you could pretend to be able to make it clear to people who will read it in future years or centuries, if we have them.
Well, they will know how it ended. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
You take all those experts, lay them into end, you still don't draw a conclusion.
I think the title of the book will probably be 6 Feet Apart.
Yes.
That's what the title will be. The thing about this particular case is no matter where you are in the United States right now, this has had some impact on you. Restaurants are closed. Grocery stores are packed. People are being sent home. Don't leave your house unless it's essential. No other event that I can think of in the media age since the 1920s or 30s, has happened like this. It's very strange. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. You don't have Grandpa saying, oh, this is nothing compared to what we went through with the Dust Bowl or whatever it is. Well, you probably do have people saying that, but imagine being born only a few years ago. And this is the world this is what you think the world is like. You can't see Dad, even though he's hanging on in the hospital with
him. Can't visit him.
It's hard to, how would a kid absorb this? With no knowledge, of course, of what world is really like most times.
Well, and I feel very sorry for women who are coming close to their delivery, pregnant women who are coming close to their delivery point, because they'll have to go through it alone, all that training that they did with their significant others and their partners to do it together. And that's not going to happen. And, oh, by the way, we hope that there aren't too many COVID patients in the same hospital. That just must be a scary moment. All of a sudden, something that is routine, it happens a lot every day, is suddenly much scarier that you're going to deliver. And that's going to happen no matter what. And it's going to happen somewhere. So,
Something that has been startling to me, and being spending a lot of time in New York, as you both have, those pictures from Manhattan where Times Square is almost empty. Have you ever seen anything like that?
No. Front cover of the New Yorker this week has a wonderful drawing of a man sweeping in the middle of Grand Central Station, and that's the only person there. It's pretty eerie.
Yeah. They look like shot stills from a wonderful movie about a threat to the earth and the people on it. When you see that, was the New Yorker cover that had only one man sweeping?
Yeah, that's what.
That's the one you're talking about.
Grand Central Station.
Yeah, yeah, in the grand big room of the Grand Central Station.
Sure.
Nobody there.
Yeah.
Where?
Well, a lot of New Yorkers have abandoned the quest, of course, and just skedaddled. But there are a lot of people still there, and so you think about all of them crammed into one and two bedroom apartments and studios and three bedrooms, and you know, still small areas for multiple people and just staying there. It is really a remarkable idea, and that's just in New York. And then there are other parts of the country where they don't understand why they're doing this because it doesn't seem to be as threatening right now.
And then a farmer in Searsboro, Iowa, suburbs, comes down with it.
Yeah.
Having been nowhere near, apparently, anything that would give it to him.
Right.
Dick, one of the things that is going to be a fallout from this, and I think only being 2 weeks in, we have not seen it fully, is the financial aspect of this. Now, Congress has passed their stimulus package, $1,200.
Yeah.
What are the financial aspects of this going to be like, do you think, in your mind?
Lloyd, you're really asking the wrong person. I was not allowed to have a checkbook. What my business acumen is fled before it even arrived.
He's actually pretty smart.
Yeah. Actually, Martha is the one that question should go to, and mine would be, who's your favorite comedian?
Well, you got some good ones. We have wonderful comedian friends who've been calling and entertaining us. I don't know if anybody's seen Jimmy Fallon, At Home Edition, should. Eddie Brill has been sending us things that he's been making. He's so terrific. Dave Hill is funny. But when you talk about money, you know, what we don't pay attention to is that when they talk about blithely passing a $2 trillion package, and we can argue all day about whether it's right or not, the fact of the matter is that $2 trillion, that's more than the federal budget is in a year. So then the question that comes up next is, if that's bigger than the national economy, then when do we start hitting inflation? Oh, let's not worry about that yet. Maybe we're like Bill Gates and have to say, first let's deal with the health care, of course. Because you can't say, oh, come back to work and go back to the restaurants and don't worry about that pile of dead bodies, you know, piling up in the corner. It's not really important. But it is going to be interesting to see what happens. And just watch the inflation percent.
Oh, please don't use the phrase, we'll see what happens.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're so right.
Yeah.
Be careful who I quote.
Watching Trump do one of his lessons in remedial reading on television, demonstrations of remedial reading, you could cut his stuff in half by taking out some of those phrases that he's in love with. The world's never seen anything like it. Doing a heck of a job, a hell of a job. A great person. And he has the same adjectives. He has about three that he knows, apparently. Fantastic and unbelievable and whatever the others are. What would it be like to go through this with a competent, intelligent, wise, and politically astute president? That would be another novel. What if?
You know, what would help a lot right now is if everybody knew a little more history. This would be a great time for all our homeschooling to be taking us back to other interesting periods of history where things like this have happened and learn what the results were and what we might be dealing with.
It's absolutely true.
I'm sorry.
That's absolutely true.
Well, I mean, after the bubonic plague, which the really bad years were 1348, 9, and 1350, I think, and although it was horrible because 20 million people died out of a relatively small population in Europe, and that was, you know, one out of two in mostly any city, and everybody in some towns, and that sort of thing. And after it was all over, then there were some implications that nobody could have thought of while all the horror was going on. And one of them was, it was the end of serfdom, because the serfs all said, you know, those people up in the manor, they need us more than we need them. And besides, all these people have died and left me with a bunch of land, and so I'm affluent now, and I don't really need to be a serf anymore, and so, thanks, I don't think I'll mend your castle.
Who's going to be the first person to say, my calculations have proved that we haven't even begun to realize how awful this is going to get? And in fact, it made clear the planet of two-legged creatures. That's us.
I don't know if it's going to do that. There are a lot of people who have it and don't die of it, so.
Mm. Well, sure. But who can say? Places are getting worse, not better. And if you, except for Trump, who sees a rosy future in this, and I wish he would describe how we're going to be even better than we were when it's over.
He thinks he's being inspirational, etc.
Yeah.
But truly, the whole goal is flatten the curve. If we still had Burma Shade signs, you know, we could have flatten the curve signs and down the road. It'd be great.
Well,
people always say, well, history will always throw up a hero. It'll always throw up a person who knows the thing. It'll be a miracle. God wouldn't let us go to pieces totally and vanish from the earth. Who knows? This may be a sandy, dusty, barren ball floating around in the sky. Well, it doesn't float.
Well, or maybe we should just wait till after the coronavirus to, fill in the census forms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm kidding. It's not going to be that bad. It won't be that bad, and that's what's, because we do have a lot of people who live through it. The question is, we just don't know how bad it will be, and we don't know who is in line, and we don't know what we don't know. We don't even know what we don't know.
And eminent people are still pronouncing the words, get worse. This is going to get worse. And you think, maybe I'll wake up tomorrow and it'll be all over. That's probably one of Trump's family.
Well, look, here's what we do know. That every other country that had a pretty severe case of it is starting to flatten. That is to say, they still have new cases, but fewer new cases than yesterday. They still have deaths, but fewer deaths than yesterday. We haven't done that yet.
No.
We don't have a curve. We have a straight, steep line.
That's right. The so-called curve is not a curve. It's an ascending line in any case.
What we've got to work toward is a curve.
Yeah.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, it's absolutely true. And as we go along, what has been interesting to me is that all news has stopped. The Olympics are postponed. The presidential election has stopped. I don't even think people know what's going on anymore. What impact is it going to have on this year of 2020, where I think we are going to have an election? What has it done just to us as a normal people?
I wish I could think that it's made us better, or that we've learned a lot from it, or that we know how to avoid this sort of thing from now on. We know the word preparation now that we didn't know before. All sorts of nice, encouraging words are probably there in the dictionary, but unused, with the exceptions of that handful that Trump relies on.
Mm. Yeah. The panic of this, which is worse in your opinion, the panic or the pandemic, up to this point?
Good question.
Yeah,
which is worse, the panic or the pandemic? Good question.
That's good. Those words will be part of your book on this stuff, or part of the title.
But it's hard to know yet, Scott, because we don't know whether what we're doing. We have grown children here in the house, And they came from New York, so they're off quarantined in the other end of the house. And they anytime they go through the one shared walkway that we have to use, they put on their gloves and their masks, their insistence, because they want to take care of the old folks. And they and so we're sharing this house, but not any space. We can wave at them through one set of French doors. Now, is that more than we need to do? Probably. But how do we know? So is that panic, or is that just sensible, or is that, what is that? It's hard to know. But so we don't know whether doing that will then prevent the pandemic from being worse, or whether the panic, we don't know. The truth is, there's just none. We don't know enough yet. So we just have to all act as though it could be a lot worse than it is, and we have to stop buying more toilet paper than we need, because some people need some, thanks. The same.
Bill Maher had a monologue joke that I probably remember for a while more. He was talking about how it was on the subject of toilet paper shortage, and that it's a real thing, and that we must remember, though, that there are other sorts of paper you can use. It doesn't have to be that. Followed by his remark, too bad. Oh, don't let me blow the line right when I'm up there. Too bad Fox News doesn't have a print edition.
Now that's funny.
That's not bad.
Because then they'd be putting their best work on paper, right?
Yeah. Panacea. We could put Panacea in there with panic and pan. Peter Pan, and just let ourselves go mad over this. One thing you can do, by the way, if you want to feel better, is, despite what a couple of idiot reviewers have said, Woody Allen's book is wonderful. It is just terrific, and it just, you realize, again, he's one of the great, great humorists of our and other times.
He's gotten good reviews on it, too. It's called Apropos of Nothing.
Apropos of Nothing, yeah.
Very funny. And he, you know, he explains a lot of stuff that some people won't believe, but then we're living in an age of people who won't believe facts. So, but yeah.
Well, Well, this has been very interesting, because I was thinking the other day, the last major issue, tragedy, whatever you want to call it, we had as a country was probably 9/11. And social media had not taken off at that point yet. This is really the first crisis that has happened in the social media age, where 60% of people get their news from Facebook, and people are putting phony news about this coronavirus on Facebook. What impact do you think that is having?
It'd be nice to know. I'm sure it's doing, as most things seem to be these days, doing more damage than we can imagine. The ignorance is so awful of when it's on a subject like this, where life and death and terrible nightmarish existence, reign supreme.
But that's what causes the panic, Scott. It's just because you don't know. In some cases, you do know what's not true. And in some cases, you do know what's true. But then there's a whole bunch of stuff in the middle where you're not sure. And so people are behaving as though it's possibly the worst-case scenario. And then if it is, then they're protected. And if we knew more, if we, for example, had plenty of tests, then if everybody could get a test, then we could know whether or not the other people in that household have a problem. And if they don't, then we could have less isolation, and we could have fewer problems. We wouldn't have to have so many people showing up at emergency rooms if they could test at home and find out, oh, I see you. No, I'm clear. My family's clear. I don't need to go down there.
It's a terrible thought that everything bad that's happened in this was easily preventable.
Nearly everything, yeah.
People wrote learned papers on how we're going to have a pandemic one of these days 10 years ago.
But it was in 2018 that the Trump administration dismantled the the pandemic unit.
Yes.
So we don't even have people in place to deal with it.
Yeah, you should get an extra 10 years for that.
I think the what's remarkable is how well people have done. How, you know, if somebody says, we're going to have to make masks from scratch, then a bunch of people pull out their sewing machines and by golly, they start making masks. Whether that'll help or not is another matter, but that's one of the things America does best is just, by golly, let's get in there and figure out how to help. Let's applaud the first-line workers when they come out of the hospital and let's do the... It's just a remarkable country in so many ways that even without leadership, we still can pull together in truly meaningful ways.
That's very interesting because there has been a question for a long time. Tom Brokaw wrote the book, The Greatest Generation, and that this generation, we are on cell phones, they are on tablets, they don't interact with each other, that we could not handle things as well as they did, you know, 100 years ago. How are we doing, do you think?
Well, it's hard to answer that positively when you have clear in your mind the news film of the kids dancing and fornicating and drinking and partying in New Orleans and Florida, up and down the beaches. that was awful. Just as they're being drilled into your head, stay 6 feet apart.
But they're all young and they're invincible and they don't care that they're going to go home and infect other people in South Dakota.
Well, one of the quotes to come from that is, so if I get the coronavirus, I get the coronavirus.
Yeah,
I came here to party and I'm going to party hard.
But on the other hand, there are friends of my children who have written or texted us to ask how we're doing and is there anything we need and our own children insisting on the masks and the gloves in the absence of knowing what we really should do. And so I do think that we have a generation behind us that is actually going to solve a lot of problems. They don't know, you know, that I think they're going to be able to straighten a lot of stuff out once we all eliminate the problems by dying off.
It must be nice to be that optimistic.
We do have a little glass half empty, glass half full issue here in this on this discussion. Can you tell which is which?
I can hear it. I can hear that there's a little yin and a yang there. I can feel it. You know, one of the things that fascinates me, and I keep asking myself this, is when I look at those pictures of Manhattan, when I even look around here, I mean, we are on a basic stay-at-home order. Only essential personnel can leave the house. Do you think people have absorbed yet how serious this is? Do you think people really get it yet?
Well, no. One of the featherhead children's chronic frolicking on the beach in Florida said, well, this is sort of the moron's necessary remark that comes up always at times like this. I think they've blown this all out of proportion.
On the other hand.
The optimistic point of view.
On the other hand, I think that if you live in New York, or you live in Washington State, or you live in Los Angeles or San Francisco, or rising other parts of the country, Atlanta now, and that you have an idea that it is serious. I think what we don't know how serious, the seriousness is not just the health care, it's also the fact that when you empty all the streets of our major cities and you bring to a halt all of the art and the camaraderie and the travel and the meeting and the being with people and all that, something else is happening. We don't know what that is yet. I'm cautiously optimistic that it will come back fairly quickly because we're human. But I think that piece, Scott, I think you're onto something that that's a more difficult piece. But we'll have to wait and see what happens in Wyoming, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
None of us know when this curve is going to flatten. How long do you think, with the information we're given by the media, this is going to last. I've heard from local health commissioners here, they think July before the restaurants will open back up, before we can get back to any sense of life. That's quite a ways away.
Yes, it is. And I'm surprised there haven't been more suicides. Has anybody heard a report on that? Suppose you spent your life hard scrabble fighting for, and you managed to get a restaurant you bought, and you opened it, and you and your wife made it a success, and you're going to see it dissolve. It's already done. They've already fired the staff.
Well,
they're already selling the silverware.
You're going to get a check for $600 to $1,200. Everything will be fine.
Yeah.
My sister, Leanne Scarborough, is a Presbyterian minister, and she spends a lot of her day just making sure she stays in contact with her flock, who are by themselves right now. I think those are the people who are the hardest hit, because if you have to stay in place and you don't see other people, that's got to be tough. So thank heavens we have all our devices now, and thank heavens we have all the ways to keep in touch with loved ones and other people we can't be in the same room with.
I wonder if you could lie there wishing you had someone to take care of you, and you're not, there's no sign you're going to get it, and you totter to the bathroom by yourself, and you try to open a can of beans and can opener, and think, well, but what about those people standing in line for the emergency room? They can't get into the emergency room. You see one account after another of somebody who's shuttled from place to place to place and never gets a test and goes home in despair.
But the only intelligent answer to your question, Scott, is we don't know.
No, we don't know.
Well,
except if Trump's gut probably knows, but nothing else.
Well, the follow-up to this, and I think a thing a lot of us are waiting on, the hospitals have not been overrun in the U.S. here yet, like Italy. Is there a real fear of that happening in the weeks to come, do you think? Is that what we're looking at?
Well, they've been overrun in New York. They're starting to split off ventilators and have one ventilator feed two or four people their oxygen. That is not exactly highly recommended procedure. There are waiting lines at the emergency rooms. I think we are doing that. Of course, it's not all across America. I know a lot of America doesn't care what happens in New York, but it could happen in a lot of places. Maybe.
And it's
I think we have to be ready.
How are you supposed to exist with all these terrible predictions by the knowledgeable, like California will suffer worse than New York did? It's just coming. You don't know.
Is there any silver lining that we can come out of this with, that we can say right now that on the other side of this, this will be better? This has done something for us positive.
I don't know. If there's a silver lining, it's going to be badly tarnished, because it takes a real imagination to see it now.
Well, you mean like the serfs overthrowing the masters in the 14th century?
Yeah, exactly.
But I do think that there are little silver linings even now. I'm sure there are many places where they're not, but The mothers whose children are all calling them every day and don't normally do that. The people who are checking on friends and otherwise being more human and kind and in touch than they normally are. The ability to get to see some wonderful stuff on television even while we're trying to do some exercise at home, because we don't normally have a chance to do that or catch up on a reading and that sort of stuff. On the other hand, I saw something the other day that said, wait a minute, let me make sure I understand. So we can save the world by watching TV? Let's don't screw this up.
Yeah.
Dick, one of my final questions here is is there a general fear? I know you're out there in the country, and that's a good place to be during this point of view and this time. You are over the age of 60, which is the danger zone, as people have said. Do you have a fear? Is there a fear of this?
A fear?
Yeah.
Are you afraid of getting
it? Oh, it occurs to me much more frequently than it has up until about 2 weeks ago, when you hear of somebody who's had to be taken home or gotten through the hospital, and you think, well, wait a minute, I've been kind of assuming that I'm immune to this, and I don't have any reason to think so. And yes, I do. If I cough, I wonder.
Dick, before we part ways here, a few years ago you told me a story, because I want to keep a sense of humor here, about Fat Jack Leonard and Jack Parr. Do you remember this story?
Yes.
Can you tell that story? I love this story.
It's when I was working at the Jack Parr Tonight Show, and Jack summoned me over to this poor show and said, you know, Fat Jack is on tonight, and you know how he works. You say something, and then he works off that. And then he has to say something to you, and you work off that. And I'm just going to sit there silently. I'm not going to respond. I'm not going to answer anything. And he did it. And Fat Jack began to sweat. And he was really getting desperate. And he was sitting there, and finally, his mind kind of snapped. And the only thing he could think of to say was a fact from his life. And he just desperately said, you know, my wife is an acrobat. Jack said she'd have to be. That was a brilliant ad-lib.
Oh, man. One of the funniest stories I've ever heard. Oh, Dick Cavett. Oh, my goodness. Martha Rogers, I can't thank you enough for joining me. I want you both to stay safe and not 2 years between visits next time, I hope.
You too, Scott.
You're a good man, Scott.
Stay safe.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Dick Cavett and Martha Rogers. Doesn't get any better than that. Phil Donahue coming up at 11, and I'll be back in just a few minutes.
Jenkins, age 71, of Marion, passed away at his home on Tuesday, March 24th, died by his children, great-grandchildren, and sister-in-law.